Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Dawson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing? What's going on?
I'm going to get you. I am fine. I was just eyeing up. I was going to start the show by wearing one of my many silly masks. I've got this,
oh, no.
This little fella here.
Monkey mask.
On YouTube, monkey mask.
Try just explaining that for audio-only listeners.
It's good. It's if you Google the wrestler Kimonito, he's a wrestler of restricted height who once got kicked off a turnbuckle. I'm feeling good. I am thinking about wearing more of my masks. I've got quite a large collection of masks I've bought in Japan, masks I've bought outside of Japan. I do like a mask, though I've got no cost to use them. Ever. There aren't that many situations where you can wear a mask, to be quite frank.
I don't know, yeah. Maybe Halloween, when Halloween rolls
around.
Yeah,
but that's one well that's once a year, and I've just got so many. I've also got a real penchant for balaclavas. That sounds bad. Balaclavas. I've got like loads of ones that are like, I've got like a leopard one I bought in Hot Topic in New York about 15 years ago. I've got one that looks like Batman's face that you put on, but it's lovely and woolen and warm. Why is the balaclava become the exclusive preserve of the problematic roadman stealing scooters and stuff? Like, why can't I wear a balaclava as a man who lives in Essex? Why can't I do that? Just tot around the place.
I can think of an awful lot of reasons why. I nearly bought one the other day, actually. when I went skiing the other day, I nearly bought one, but I just thought, outside of my 3 days of skiing, there's no practical use for this, because I'm never going to stumble around Tokyo in a balaclava.
I was in a deserted nuclear bunker about 3 months ago, and I bought one there. We were on a ghost hunt, even though I really have very little appetite or patience with ghosts, ghost hunting, people pretending ghosts exist. But it was in a deserted Cold War bunker. From like 9 PM until 3 AM, long time. I mean, bearing in mind it's a bunker, ghosts can be there any time, and there's no natural light coming in. It's a bunker, so why don't we just do this during the day, and I can just have a McDonald's on the way home? but no, they had this nuclear bunker on the go, so to speak, and it had like rooms and rooms of dumb terminals that they would have used in the event of like a nuclear attack. And for that reason, it was really, really fascinating. But for the whole men in military attire pretending that, there's a ghost in the room with some spooky magic tricks, I had very little. I actually went to sleep at one point, because obviously down in a nuclear bunker, they would obviously have to have people sort of sleeping down there. So there's a lot of like abandoned beds. So when they were just going on about their going on about the ghosts and stuff, I just went, I'm just gonna pile in it. I went for a sleep for about half an hour.
Why the fuck would there be a ghost in a nuclear bunker? Nobody died down there. There wasn't a nuclear war. Why is there just a ghost stumbling around in a bit of concrete under the ground with no historic
because it's very cheap to hire overnight. It's like you slip the guard 50 quid and you can take down your ghost troop. You know what? I don't mind being lied to. I don't have that strong an opinion about ghosts and stuff and people like that. It's absolutely fine. I'll sit through any old nonsense. But I think you require in that situation a bit of razzle-dazzle, a bit of pageantry. And these people just did not they were the thickest of the thick, and they just did not have the razzle-dazzle. They did not have the Derek Acora about them. They were just like, people would ask him questions like, did anyone die near here? Yeah, probably did die near here, actually. Yeah, you're right. And it's like, that was their razzle-dazzle. It's like,
sounds
Jesus.
Amazing.
And they had like little stupid little like LED light tricks, basically. You know, a little button in your pocket, and you press the button if you to make the thing make the noise. So you go, oh, it's a ghost detector. There's definitely some ghostly activity down here. So yeah, it's just all that, really. I find it very I don't mind paying a load of money to go into a nuclear bunker because I very much enjoyed the computers and
cool.
Tapping around on some beautiful 70s terminals. It was like Fallout. Like, all of the terminals look like that. And the razzle dazzle was severely lacking with the ghost hunters of Essex.
Bloody hell! That's just pretty good though. Like, I mean,
did was buy it a balaclava though?
In the event of a nuclear war, would it be actually a good bunker? Did you think, oh yeah, I'd love to be here in a nuclear war?
Well, it's quite close to London. You imagine that would be the first place that gets hit, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how far the blast would go back in the 70s. But I think we would have been all right down there. It was a really fascinating thing. You know, there was loads of there was like a broadcast room and like just map room and all kind. And you know, looking at your house and seeing, you know, blast radiuses, radii, sort of mapped out. You're like, oh dear. It was really good stuff. And the gift shop was on the honor system because nobody was there to man it, obviously. So you just get your own. Put cash down and buy whatever you wanted. So I came away with a nuclear attack tea towel and a balaclava. So a good time was had by all.
That sounds ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, we're closer. I have a weird interest in nuclear weapons, a mild obsession. I don't know. I remember when I was like 16, we had to give a talk on anything we wanted to, and I gave a presentation on nuclear weapons, and I got like full marks. I'm the sort of kid who was like shit at everything at school unless I was interested in something. Then I went all out and I did the best thing I could ever do. And I gave a talk, and it was a very vivid talk. I was like...
Vivid talk?
Well, it was like...
And their skin would fall off their bones?
Yeah.
Oh,
it
God.
Was really like clinical. I was like, if a nuclear bomb went off in London now, you know, the windows would shatter here and this would happen and that would happen and they're all on the edge of their seats. It was really, I really went into depth on it.
Thanks for that, mate. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for scaring all of your classmates.
Everyone you love would be vaporized. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we think about it as much as we maybe should, that at any moment, like, half the world could be vaporized on a bad day. And, you know, the doomsday clock is like the closest it's ever been to the end of civilization, which I find the doomsday clock is just a load of nonsense. It's just a bit, you know, it's some scientists every year decide how close we are to annihilation. But yeah, I guess it is. We are.
I think it's the scientists just trying to get laid. I think he's really laying it on.
Oh, for the doomsday clock.
We are going to all be toast next year, so why don't you come to bed with me? You're a disgrace, whoever this scientist is. He's disgusting. Absolutely foul.
If there's a nuclear war there, you'll be all right. Ain't no bombs going for Southend. Right. I don't think Essex is on the hit list.
We're on the Thames. That's where the subs will come up.
There's nothing of strategic value in Essex.
Wave them in.
Except Lakeside Shopping Centre. We got a story this week from... Why am I not scrolling? Liam.
It's Liam.
Hello, Liam. And actually, this week's news story, which Pete's now going to find while I read this out, involves a Yakuza mob boss who tried to smuggle some weapons-grade plutonium. Yay. Good. Liam says, hello, right. Chris and Pete. I got back to England last year after studying in Japan and smashing through podcast episodes while working. It's been incredibly nostalgic. I used to live in Meijido, Tokyo, and I'd met up with a few Japanese mates, and it was starting a night out at a Shibuya bar crawl to be followed by a day trip to Enoshima. Needless to say, we were a little too keen on catching up, so we went heavy on the drinks. Despite waking up late the following day, we agreed to stick to the plan, good man, and dragged ourselves onto the three or so trains we needed to arrive in Enoshima. Once there, Enoshima is kind of like this island, not too far from Kamakura, just south of Tokyo. Lovely place, beautiful place, good little island, lots of feral cats. Once there, it was time for food. We had a big burger lunch with several Enoshima beers, and we were refueled for our long walk down the beach. It was quite the stroll, and the sun was setting when we were on the return stretch. It was getting pretty dark there, and we didn't know... we didn't want to turn an ankle traversing the rocks, and so we turned on our phone lights. As we did, I spotted a little crab scuttle nearby. Then, as I trained my eyes to the spot, I saw another. And suddenly, there are a lot of bloody crabs everywhere, all over the rocks and the pathways. We took pictures and videos. We were in awe of the numbers. They were quite small. My friend said he wanted to pick one up. He selected one, and this is a fucking mental story. And he selected one and gently went to scoop it up. But as he lifted it and opened his hands, horrifyingly, there was just a single leg inside his palms. Realising this, he exclaimed in the most Natsuki-like English I've ever heard, "Oh, fuck, I broke it." He immediately put it back down, looked completely shocked, and turned around to apologise to the crab in some of the most kegor-heavy language that I've ever heard. Moshiwake gozaimasen. Not sure if crabs shed their limbs like some lizards do, or quite what happened, but hopefully his thousands of crab friends helped him out. I'd love to hear if either of you have been to Enoshima, as I think it's often overlooked, despite being not that far from Tokyo. Best wishes, Liam, with a... just a story that sort of went in many different directions, ultimately ended up in a terrible incident with a crab. I don't... What story is this?
What I like about our story, it's like what I like about our stories that are sent in, they're almost like sort of metaphors for man, aren't they? Oh, look at this lovely crab. I'm going to pick it up. Oh, I've killed humanity and I've killed all of the wildlife and man, a study. That's all it is. But also, Linus Tech Tips, the sort of tech vlogger, those guys, watch quite a lot of their work. And whenever they test out sound on, you know, a mobile phone or a laptop, they always use Crab Dance, which is a video of a load of crabs dancing and some terrible sort of Euro disco pop. And I'm imagining all of these crabs sort of dancing around going, yeah, das ist good.
I mean, the one thing about these stories is they always lack like a narrative structure, don't they? There's no three-act or five-act structure. Usually when you read a story, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And right. Sort of as a nice, satisfying ending. But more often
than
not...
What's wrong with this? Saw crab, just... picked up crab, damaged crab. Well, there's the three acts.
There's no... It's a tragedy, isn't it, I guess? There's no uplifting ending. There's no, like, metaphor or story. It's just a crab got ripped up on a beach.
It's the iron claw. Just everyone dying and losing limbs.
But I think crabs do sacrifice their limbs, don't they? They do.
I've seen that gif of the crab going, deal with it, and pulling his own fucking leg off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, that is an incredibly boss thing to do as a crab, pulling your own arm off. Ah! Don't give a shit.
Enoshima. Go for the stray cats, stay for the crabs. Enoshima is nice, definitely underrated. There was a famous video a year or two ago of the Enoden train, the Enoshima coastal train, beautiful train going along the coast. And there's
a beautiful train. You sound like Donald Trump there. A beautiful train. It was a train. It was a beautiful train. It's the best train ever existed.
And like, I don't think you might have seen this video, right? There's like 10, 15, 20 photographers, train otaku photographers. Mm. And they're waiting, and the train's coming around a corner. They're going to get the money shot. And then I think a guy, I think he was Turkish, comes around the corner on a bicycle and sees all the cameramen, and he's in between the cameramen and the train. And he kind of goes, "Wee!" And he blocks the view of the train slightly or ruins the shot in the eye of the photographers. And they all go absolutely fucking mental. and they go, they get really angry, and they're like shouting and screaming at him. They're like, you owe us money. You've ruined the shot. You owe us like compensation.
No one's buying those photos.
Yeah, it's all a bit, and it became like a thing. And that is the sort of people that hang out at Enoshima. I've always remembered that, though. I was in Kamakura the other day, and I just thought, I want to find these people. I want to find the train or takis. Get in the way of a shot and be like, just ruin their day.
I think, but you surely, I mean, if you did that, you are improving their life, because then they could, you know, the thrill of the hunt is surely just, you know, that's the whole raison d'etre for a train fan. So yeah, you're giving that back to them. Imagine like your favourite film. Imagine seeing that for the first time. You are giving that back to them.
I don't know about that. I mean, I thought they could utilise the guy on the bike and make him like part of the scene. Like a good photographer adapts to the heat of the moment. They don't go, somebody's in the fucking train shot, it's done. They go,
The guy sounded like he was a bit of a dick, though. He's being a rotten dick.
He did wave his arms around and sort of make a spectacle. You decide. Go watch it. Go look at, I don't know where the video, it's on YouTube. He's typing like train or taku angry. It's a classic video. But I'm even more angry about weapons grade plutonium. What's going on this week, Mr. Donaldson? Did you find the story about the... This kind of, it sounds like a Tom Clancy fucking spy film. Have you heard about this?
Nuclear crime, Chris. That's what we're talking about this week on the show.
Get back down the bunker.
A leader of the Japanese organised crime syndicate, Yakuza, identified as a man called Takeshi Ibasawa, has been charged by US prosecutors with conspiring to traffic nuclear materials, including uranium and weapons-grade plutonium from Myanmar, to other countries, according to a superseding indictment announced on Wednesday. The Hill reported that man is in a lot of trouble, but the undercover Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, posed as a narcotics and weapons trafficker in Thailand, and Takeshi Ibasawa is in a whole heap of trouble because the US worked with Thai authorities to seize nuclear samples, which were subsequently transferred to US law enforcement custody. Weapons grade plutonium and uranium, according to the DOI, were just out on the open market, and that is what the Yakuza are up to these days. They are trafficking literal uranium and plutonium, which is just great news, great stuff. Great news.
Weapons grade excitement. I mean, when you think of like crime syndicates, you think, they're just pushing a bit of cocaine on the side. Not weapons grade plutonium out of Myanmar. Like, that's a pretty bold move. Is there any idea what they were going to do with it?
Like, I think he was just basically selling it to whoever was interested, basically. I mean, I imagine when you've got nuclear materials, there are very few people who would be willing to take that, portion of risk on. There's very few people who, I mean, I wouldn't, if I had a load of uranium dug out the back garden, I don't think I'd know any way of getting them to a force that could use it for evil and weapons of mass destruction, etc. But that sounds very much like this. What this chap's been up to, the Yakuza leader. So they've gone from just basically like financial fraud and deeds to the houses, selling them off. They've turned from cigarettes, fake cigarettes, to weapons grade plutonium. It's good stuff, isn't it?
Nuclear Yakuza. It'd be a great side quest in the Yakuza video games, wouldn't it? Get the weapons grade plutonium.
Yeah, definitely.
My lord.
Exactly.
I've seen a few like nuclear related stories today. Like, I also saw there was a leak at the Fukushima plant. Somebody somebody didn't do the tap tight enough or something, one of the tanks, and some contaminated water just spilled out. And also some people got sprayed with some contaminated water, honestly. And then I watched a Kurzgesagt in a nutshell video about what happens after nuclear war. I don't know, why is everything about nuclear war today? Why is it all hitting me?
Why is
everything
about nuclear war, for crying out loud?
And you went to a nuclear bunker. It feels like, is this a sign? Time to get ready. And also, I also learned that in Azerbaijan, kind of upmarket place in Tokyo, lots of foreign residents, lots of embassies there.
Yep.
They're turning one of the underground stations into a bunker because they're worried about North Korean missiles. And there's something quite ominous about that. Oh, we're a bit worried. They could missile strike Tokyo, we better make a bunker for the rich people in Tokyo. We better do it. It's like, yeah, it's a bit, that's a bit ominous as well. Don't know.
Yeah.
The world is a dangerous place.
Certainly is. Certainly is, Christopher.
What are you going to do about it?
Nothing. I'm going to sit here and play Ghost of Tsushima on a beanbag.
Good man. That's good, what man. I'm doing. That's what I would also do. We're back in just a moment, guys. Your stories, comments, and questions in the fax machine.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
We got a message from Vincent. I love the name Vincent. Hello, Combustible Chris and Paraffin Pete. Long time viewer here, all the way back from when you were giving us a video tour from your first apartment. I've recently reached the chapter on school bullying in the Abroad in Japan book and was struck when you mentioned that even teachers weren't intervening in beatdowns happening right before them. I know how JET teachers are often reminded not to overstep their boundaries when it comes to the permanent teachers, but I wonder how they'd react to a JET breaking up a fight that they would otherwise ignore. I thought this must be like a truly a common occurrence. Interested to know your thoughts. Looking forward to hearing you both again twice a week until the end of time. Thank you, Vincent. Are you allowed to give someone a swift karate chop to the solar plexus, etc.?
I remember I nearly had to step in. I think about this memory a lot. I nearly had to step in. This naughty student was like getting up in the face of a female colleague I worked with, who was really lovely. She was quite small, and this guy was like just shouting at her and getting really close to her, like inappropriately close, like in a way that would be like probably suspension, expulsion in like the UK. And I was like standing there, not quite knowing what to do, because I thought I should maybe step in the middle, so I just sort of hovered nearby. And she was like, "Oh, don't worry, Chris Sensei, you go back to the staff room." This is sort of towards the end of the class. And I was like, I just sort of stood there like, I can't just walk away from this. But she kept insisting that I'll just leave me do it, let me. And so in the end, I walked off because she was adamant that I should go. And it was fine in the end. But I did, that was one time I was a bit like, I think if I had done something, I could have got in a lot of trouble. If I'd got in the middle or if I'd sort of pushed him back or something. So it's one of those things they say on the JET program, you know, don't do things like that. Leave it to the teacher to handle. And it's a weird thing, but yeah, I guess it wouldn't look good as a foreign employee, like having any physical altercation with students like that. So I understand. Well, it was a tough situation. Yeah. We got one here from Bella. He says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. I'm traveling to Japan with my boyfriend as a celebratory vacation after completing my studies at university, and I'd like to explore some of the Japanese nightlife. My boyfriend and I are huge wrestling fans and would love to catch some matches while we're in Japan. Do either of you have advice on hunting down more obscure or extreme wrestling events? We'll travel far and wide across all of Japan to see some sweaty men get beat up, so location isn't the issue. Big fan of the podcast. Cheers, Bella from Detroit." Pete, over to you, because I don't know a damn thing about wrestling.
Just go Currican Hall. There is wrestling going on three times a night, every single Currican night Hall. Until the end of time. There's just turn up, buy a ticket. There's always wrestling going on. Or just find a company that you seem to like the look of. DDT is probably my favourite out there, or Noah. And just get on their website and do it like that. But yeah, I mean, Currican Hall, there's always events going on in Tokyo at the wrestling. There's an adorable, Chris, a video of there's a famous Japanese performer called Asuka, who's a very hard-hitting, very colourful haired woman. And she's a massive WWE star, like about as big as it gets, you know, champion, repeated champion, etc., etc. And she rocked up at a Shinjuku bar that was dedicated to wrestling, the woman who ran the wrestling bar seemed particularly into Asuka. So there's just pictures of Asuka all over the bar. There's drawings, cartoon anime depictions of Asuka, and Asuka, I think, happened to be walking past, and she's like, "Oh, this is the wrestling bar, and like my picture's on the front. Wouldn't it be funny if I just popped in?" I think it's in Nagoya, actually. Anyway,
right.
And she goes in the bar, and obviously like, Nagoya is a little bit off the beaten track when it comes to Osaka, Kyoto, Tokyo, and stuff, even for Japanese residents. And she just piles it in this bar, and the woman just goes, "It would be like." A god just stepped in your fucking front room, or like a cartoon character. If you're like really into the you know, Marvel, and I don't know, Thor just popped in for a cup of tea. She pops in, and she just goes, this woman just stands there and takes it in, and she goes, and then just cries for the rest of the time.
Oh my god.
She's like,
cool.
She's like, it's such a lovely... lovely moment. It really is good stuff. So, well worth digging out that one. Maybe we can tweet out or something. Very adorable.
It's almost as moving, I imagine, as the time Harry Potter's biggest fan, a Japanese girl, met Daniel Radcliffe and touched his face on live television. Palpated his face gently because she couldn't believe that he was real.
He was there, right, okay.
I think that's more cringe than moving, though. But also seek that.
It was like when you did that show in London. People were just coming up and touching your face.
I want to touch Daniel Radcliffe's face. It's brilliant. She's sitting in a chair with like a wizard's hat on in like a studio in Warner Brothers Studio London. She's like, "Yes, go." And then Daniel Radcliffe comes out of a door and he goes, "Gryffindor, is it?" And she's like, "Ah!" She explodes and then cries.
Imagine
and then
if she stabbed him.
Face.
Just absolutely
fucking
John
Slytherin, Slytherin, it's not Gryffindor.
I interviewed Daniel Radcliffe from that. He did like a sort of mini film with Don Draper, John Hamm.
Did he
It was good. I remember it being quite good because I think they're both very underrated comic actors, but yeah, they did a film together on small, minimal release. But I interviewed him in a hotel room for half an hour, and halfway through the interview, he sort of went, "Sorry, are you Cheeky Pete from XFM?" and I was indeed Cheeky Pete from XFM, because he, when he said when they used to go, I used to do a breakfast show with TV presenter Carl Alex Zane, and he said when he was a bairn and he filmed Harry Potter, all of the cast members from Harry Potter used to get driven in their cars, and they used to request to listen to XFM
really
to our japery in the mornings. So I presume I'm on nodding terms with a couple of the other cast members as well.
That's bloody awesome.
Because our radio show was fucking childish and it was for 10-year-olds.
You and Alex Zane. Can't believe it. Yep. So Daniel Radcliffe was your fan. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to subtly allude
to? And I'll tell you for one, I've never seen any fucking Harry Potter film. So you can stick that up your pipe.
Did Daniel Radcliffe touch your face? Was he amazed that you were real?
No, he didn't.
Full circle.
He didn't go. Yeah. They must be like
Cheeky
sort of,
Pete. Cheeky Pete Seagull.
Tell me about your celebrated feature Songy Song Song or Fish Fridays. Tell me about all that.
Oh my God. That's beautiful. What a great moment. What a beautiful moment. That's lovely, lovely stuff.
Turning the tables, yeah.
Got one last question from Ernie. Ernie says, hello, convoluted Chris and partitioned Pete. I'm planning my second trip to Japan for a winter trip late in 2024. Since I work full-time, go to university, I'm unable to visit outside of dead of winter or the middle of summer. Having visited previously in August, I would like to avoid the sweltering experience that is Japan in the summer. Rightly so. Apparently this year it's going to be joke temperature. My question is this. Are there any good New Year's celebrations in Japan? Since I'll be visiting in winter, I do plan on visiting some more northern cities, but I wonder if New York's Eve scene is a bigger enough draw to circle back to Tokyo. All the best, guys. Ernie, New Year's in Japan.
It's all right. It's not
my favourite memory. I was in Niigata, bored stiff, and a Japanese guy grabbed hold of me and my friend and took us on a whirlwind tour of Nagano, not Niigata, at night. That was really good. But yeah,
imagine if you were in Niigata and he decided to take you on a whirlwind tour of Nagano.
All aboard.
Get in the car.
All aboard the train. But yeah, New Year's in Japan, it's all right. Some fireworks, but overall, just another day, isn't it? They do celebrate it a lot more than Christmas, though. Personally, I'd avoid it, though, because around New Year's in Japan or Shogatsu season, everything closes down for the first 5 days of January, and like you can't do anything. Everything's shut, and it's just not a good time to be here, really. Unless you're skiing or something like that, then it's worth it, but I'd avoid New Year's.
You've become such a ski head, Chris Broad. You've become such a ski boy.
four days every 2 years.
Drinking schnapps.
Schnapps. I drank a lot, but I don't think it was any schnapps. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back later in the week, guys. Myself and, was it Cheeky Pete? Is it Cheeky Pete?
Cheeky Pete from XFM. Cheeky. I was once in the top five radio sidekicks on The Guardian.
And look at him now.
Look at me now.
Fair, he's doing
I'm Chris
right.
Broad's sidekick once again. Forever the sidekick, never the bride.
Cheeky Pete. But for now, guys, have yourselves a good one. We'll see you right back here to do all over again on the Broad Japan podcast. Bye for now. Cheeky.
Goodbye.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.